Greetings, podcast pilgrims, and welcome to the Dave Weekly, where, once again, Shaman Shires will be your spirit guide through the traverses and travails of the Edinburgh Fringe. It's our third year running up here. Unbelievable! Although running is a dangerous pursuit in a town filled with this many drama students. You'll no doubt end up tripping over one wearing a cutlass and then be forced to spend an hour watching their review show by way of apology, which will turn out to be a tribute to the Pirates of Penzance done in the style of Breaking Bad with Brechtian overtones. It's an hour of your life that you'll never see again, but if it involved having to endure that show one more time, you'd happily turn your back on it. Luckily, it's a conundrum that you won't have to face, as we're bringing you the best comedians directly to your earbuds, ensuring that you can enjoy Edinburgh's primest cuts from the comfort of your own study, zoo, or water closet. This week, we've got lashings of laughs from self-proclaimed best act at the Fringe, Romesh Ranganathan, all sorts of amusing musings from Dan Schreiber, and a cracking turn from Dave's Joke of the Fringe winner, Rob Orton. Hello and welcome to the Dave Weekly with my guest, Romesh Ranganathan. Hello, Romesh.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Not bad.
Excellent. We're up in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Just chilling out. This time last year, you and I were living in the same place.
Yeah.
And this time this year, we're not. Why?
I just felt like, you know, it was nice to get to know you and stuff, but I think you could tell it was sort of starting to get tense towards the end. And that's why sort of the goodbye was so muted, because I just thought... I hope and pray that I don't see this man for a very long time.
Yeah.
And so it's proved to be. It
was very much a goodbye and not a see you later,
wasn't it? Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I sort of skipped out the door. Didn't really. We sort of went through sort of, it was like a bell curve, the relationship, in terms of like, yeah, sort of met you, thought this is a dapper guy, let's get to know him. And then I got to know you and I thought, okay, he's sort of peaked now. And then towards the end, the banter had sort of died out, hadn't it? And we're just sort of looking at each other and just hoping this would come to an end.
All Victorian trousers, no mouth.
That's, yeah, exactly.
How many people,
yeah,
describe me.
Yeah. Was that from a review?
No. Just okay. Friends.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
But I do ask for constant reviews. It helps me to keep up my, four-star friendship.
Yeah. I like to be consistently validated.
Yeah, exactly.
By just asking people, how do you think this conversation went? How many stars would you give it?
Yeah. If I was to stop now,
yeah.
Would you be A, disappointed?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's fine to be that needy. I think it's a useful trait for a comedian.
Well, it's the reason that we become comedians, that constant need.
Uh-oh.
For people to approve.
Romesh, have we just gone deep?
Mate, this is, if you get me on the podcast, this is what happens. It goes deep,
yeah,
mate. Right? I don't do shallow. I'm not about being funny. I'm about changing perceptions. Do you know what I mean? And just, it's not about just telling jokes and stuff. And you know, other people come up and, oh, they want to be funny and stuff. But I want people to sort of have a different way of looking at the world,
yeah,
after they've seen my show, and the funny is secondary to that. And you know, and if one person can leave my show this year and think, do you know what, that has changed my life, then it means nothing.
I'll be honest, I don't care.
Yeah.
If you can only affect one person's life,
yeah,
you're not a very good public
speaker.
It
actually means that my children will still continue to be hungry.
Yeah.
So it's actually, I don't know why I said that.
I always thought it's a weird phrase, isn't it? If you can just help one person.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
It means that surely your message is not applicable to a large group of people.
If you can just help one person, you're probably not good enough.
Yeah. We've got someone who can basically smash out 100 people per talk.
Yeah.
And we've got Anthony Robbins back there. He's charging thousands of pounds for advice.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very specific style of comedy, which is where you just target one person.
Also, I think comedy gets almost freaky if you just like speaking to a very small group of people.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got a really low audience.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't happen to me, but
sort of hypothetically.
I can empathise with people that have less of an appeal than myself. Yeah. I understand that it's a struggle for some people. But
yeah. I mean, sure, you're still not mainstream, but you attract a lot of people.
It's basically what it is. It's what I've managed to do is combine a mainstream appeal with a sort of a really critical acclaim. So I sort of tread that line between sort of being somebody that everybody loves, but at the same time those guys saying he hasn't sold out at all, he's kept his principles, you know, close to his heart. And that's why I'm sort of, you know, I've sort of skyrocketed to the position that I'm at now.
Absolutely. You could say you cult, but with the following also of a large, very large cult.
Exactly.
Like a large religion.
I would say that, you know, I think I'm sort of like the Batman of comedy, in terms of everybody knows who I am and they enjoy what I do, but also I'm seen as sort of an underground hero.
Thinking more you're the Scientology of comedy, in that
everyone
knows who you are,
that is,
but
no,
people like cross the street to avoid you.
Right, okay.
I mean, similar analogies, really.
No. I don't think they're similar at all. Okay, in fact, well, if I would almost say what you said is offensive. But you know, you've gone with it now. Yeah. It's been recorded, so should we just carry on and pretend it's not got awkward now?
I think I've pinned that to my mast.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm more than happy to go with it.
You feel now. All right, that's cool.
No, it's good. So, I mean, believe it or not, your show isn't about living arrangements. It's about comedy.
Yeah, well, it's not about comedy.
Is it not a dissection of the art of comedy? I read into rom-com the title.
It's not. Basically, I'm not explicitly stating what comedy's about, but by watching the show, you will get an idea of what comedy is about.
It's basically a masterclass.
Essentially, yeah. Mm. Essentially, and in that way, I've been saying to comedians, I don't think it's good for you to come and watch, just because it's difficult. You invest a lot of money, you bring your show up here, and then you come and watch my show, and then you think, you know, why did I bother?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? And so that's why I've sort of said to people, can we make sure that comedians don't come just for the sake of their festival? Do you know what I mean? Mm. I don't want to upset people. And it can be difficult.
Did you specifically write a comedy rule book just so you could rip it up?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. In fact, I asked specifically for a room with a window so that I could throw the book out of said window.
Yeah.
That's just how I operate.
Do you have to erect some kind of notice that says, watch out for falling conventions?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they get the roofers in every night. Yeah. Because obviously that's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my experience of roofers is that they are largely unreliable. So I imagine don't walk under Romesh's room during the Edinburgh Fringe.
No, exactly. That's what I would say. In fact, I've asked them to put that on the posters, but it hasn't gone out yet, unfortunately. Yeah. It's a shame.
So have you kind of had a good Fringe so far? Because last year was obviously a high point. You know, you're getting to live with me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Rob Beckett was there. Yeah. Lloyd Griffiths was there. There's a certain degree of you having to put up with certain people, but...
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of those guys.
Yeah. Much too much, some would say.
You know, waking up in the morning... And then having Rob Beckett windmill you, that's the first thing you see in the morning, I don't think is acceptable.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm glad he's not in Edinburgh this year.
Absolutely. Well, I've still got a picture of Rob Beckett from last year on my phone.
What, naked?
I'm using it as insurance.
Yeah.
As his star continues to rise,
yeah,
I think it's always nice to have a bit of collateral against someone.
I think
someone.
It's just to wait for, you know, the I'm a Celebrity thing to peak.
Mm.
And then photo of you in lingerie... I slept with Rob Beckett, and then a photo of him naked just to prove it. I think it'd be wonderful.
Absolutely.
I'd love to see him crush as a result of that.
Yeah.
So if you could sort that out, I'd really appreciate
How
it.
How the mighty would fall.
Yeah, beautiful. It would certainly help me out.
That'd wipe that grin off his face.
Yeah, but, what a grin.
Yeah, it is a great, best grin in showbiz.
Yeah, I was trying to think of a better one, but I can't. Yeah.
No,
it is a good grin.
No, he has done well, though, hasn't he, Rob?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to other people, really. and if anything, when I hear about people doing well, it's upsetting.
Yeah.
You know, you ask me what would make this festival better is if none of the other comedians were here. I like to hear about failure. It's of other people. It's heartwarming. But, you know, then you sort of...
It's a comfort, isn't it?
It is a comfort.
I suppose when you're spinning gold, then you don't want to hear about other people's bronze.
Yeah, because some people are sort of, they've brought up stuff, they've brought shows up here that have got no place at the Edinburgh Festival, let alone outside of their bedrooms. And then I'm delivering what I'm delivering in my room, and these people are somehow competing in the same festival.
Mm.
It's offensive, and I think it's a form of racism.
So apart from all the reasons that we've discussed, and they are myriad,
yeah.
What is the overwhelming sort of, kind of review that you could give of your show? If you're reviewing yourself...
Oh man, that's horrible.
Yeah, failed it.
So basically, the show is called rom com, and the reason it's called rom com. Well, no, it's not the reason it's called rom com, but the show is basically me sort of saying that my life is after the end of a rom com, and I'm just presenting what's happened to me. Mm. And so there's like little issues, like my wife and I don't agree about how to bring up the children, the fact that she thinks I've become antisocial. And sort of us trying to, it's sort of an examination of where I am. Oh God, that sounded awful. I feel
you've
a bit
committed
sick
it now.
Saying that. Oh
you've
God,
committed
man,
it,
you've drawn me into a position where I've sounded so wanky.
Yeah.
And I could see what you did there. Yeah, we had a nice little chat, and you thought, let's make this guy expose himself as an egotistical little twat.
I can't have you just being hilarious all the way through the chat.
Yeah,
otherwise,
no,
people are going to start wanting to demand more and more of you on TV.
But that sounded so pretentious. I'm really upset about it.
We're going to have to trim this down, so we'll use that bit, really. All right?
I'll be honest with you. If I hear that go out, it will be the end of this podcast. Mark my words.
A shitstorm in a teacup.
Absolutely, mate.
Yeah.
Well, you won't know what's coming until it's been and gone.
Well, you have kind of sort of set us on guard for it now. I mean, I think the best
that's
threats...
true. It's not the best way. It's not the best way of setting up a
you
sneak attack.
You won't know
attack.
That I'm coming to get you. I'll tell you I am.
Yeah. You won't know when I'm coming to get you on Thursday, yeah. around four.
Yeah, I've said around. It could be any time yeah. up to and preceding 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Sorry.
Excellent. Well, we'll be on our guard from now on.
Yeah, please do.
Thank you for putting us in such a position. Ramesh, thanks for coming to chat to us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being the best comedian at the Fringe.
Cheers, mate. I mean, you know, that's just, it's just my nature.
Just
what
a given.
Yeah. I can't be anything else.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that was Ramesh being modest, as is his calling card. And next up, I say, it's Dave Joke of the Fringe winner, Rob Orton. Okay, well, it's that time of the Fringe Festival again, where the Dave Joke of the Fringe is announced. And I'm pleased to say I have the winner of the Joke of the Fringe sitting about to my 11 o'clock on a standard clock. And it is Rob Orton. Hello, Rob.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. I've just finished my show, so I'm a bit still coming down from that. But yeah, I'm feeling good. I'm all right. Yeah.
This is when we like to catch comedians, when they're on the come down, when they're the least funny. We feel it gives a good flavour of who that person is.
Brilliant.
So, I mean, let's talk about this award because, I mean, you know, without needing to blow our own trumpet, it's kind of prestigious.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, of the last few years, certainly, your name probably sticks out as someone that probably people might not have, you know, thought of as the first person to have won this. So,
well, yeah, I don't think anyone would have thought that.
Did you think it, Rob?
No.
No, you were in the list of disbelievers.
Yeah, I was. But it just so happens, like, before I came up, my dad was like, oh, good luck. You know, people say good luck.
Mm.
And I guess the fact that one of the judges or whatever was sat in the room. So there's obviously thousands of shows going on, people telling thousands and thousands of jokes. So for someone to be sat in that room when I was saying that joke, I think is a bit of luck, really.
Mm.
And then they put it out to the judges and then the general public voted and now we're doing this.
Yeah, I mean, it's very serendipitous, isn't it? I think it's high time that we heard that joke. So do you want to give us... I'll give you a minor drum roll on my thighs.
Yeah, go on then. I heard a rumour that Cadbury's are releasing an oriental chocolate bar. Could be a Chinese whisper.
Hey!
There you go.
There it is.
That is it.
That is the funniest joke of the Fringe, as decided by, I believe, the voting public.
I know.
I mean, had you had Cadbury's on your side? Is that what happened?
No, I hadn't actually.
All the workers at the Bourneville factory just thought, you know what? This guy needs our support.
Do you know what? I do eat chocolate bars before the show, but not Cadbury's ones.
Uh-oh. I kind of thought this might be some kind of Alan Partridge-style ruse to bag yourself a lot of whispers.
Well, I would like it, yeah. I'm up for eating as many whispers as I can.
If they were shop-soiled?
Yeah.
You're from Yorkshire, Rob.
Yeah.
From specifically York, I'm led to believe.
Yeah, York, from a small village called Barnby Moor, just outside of York. It's about 12 miles outside of York. It's quite it's got a village institute and a shop. No, the shop's closed down, actually. So it's quite quiet there now.
I mean, it sounds pretty urbane. Is that what created this?
Urbane?
Yeah. Finger on the pulse, sophisticated boho chic kind of comedian that you are?
Yeah. Like when I was growing up, I thought, I'm going to do a gig at the Village Institute, but it's never came off. But maybe this award will lead to that.
Yeah. So let's talk about the Joke of the Fringe again. What does it mean to you as a performer? I mean, other than playing your local institute.
Mm. When I got the phone call, I was surprised and pleased.
Can you recreate your immediate reaction for me now?
Flipping it.
I mean, that kind of high drama.
It was.
Unraveled.
Yeah, and they called me up and they were like, are you excited? I said, on the inside.
On the outside, I'm still a stoic Yorkshireman. Nary a smile will crack these rosy cheeks.
It's been difficult, you know. I try not to get too excited because getting excited about something can lead to being let down.
That's true.
So
it's also a very negative way of looking at the world, Rob.
Yes, it is. But, I, you know, I'm not particularly negative, but I'll just keep going. And I think the good thing about this award is that it means that people who may not have heard my comedy before will maybe get to hear it now, which would be fantastic. Oh. Would it be fantastic? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, at least I'll get to hear one line of it, if nothing else.
One line. And to be honest, I'm not that much of a joke writer.
Right. So you really kind of spunked your load early with this. People are going to be expecting a big payoff, and you've got...
Yeah, they're going to be... Maybe tomorrow I will have a show full of people going, where's the one-liners? And I'll say, there is one.
Yeah, that's why they call it a one-liner, idiots.
Maybe. But I do writing stories and poems and stuff like that. And that's kind of, I just like standing up on stage and reading things out. And but I had the idea for that joke and then thought I will say it at the Fringe and see how it goes down. And it went down all right in the room where the guy was who obviously put it forward for the thing. It's kind of one of those where people go, ha ha, you know. Like, it's like a cracker joke or something.
Yeah. Yeah, a Christmas cracker rather than like a Jacob's cream.
Yeah, or Robbie Coltrane. Or...
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
He's not, yeah.
So he had some great murder material though. Let's not forget.
Yeah, he did.
You're killing me. So, Rob, tell us where people can hear this joke of yours and all your other ramblings as well.
I'm on at the Banshee Labyrinth, which is a part of the PBH Free Fringe, and it's on at 4 o'clock every day on Nidri Street, and it's called The Sky Show.
Rob Orton, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
That was Rob Orton, still riding the crest of the wave that is his Dave Joke of the Fringe win. And next up, it's an interesting chap with lots of interesting facts, Dan Schreiber. Hello, Dan.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Yeah, great.
Excellent. So this is the second Edinburgh, which we've had a chance to catch up at, although
that's
the first time you've appeared on the Dave Weekly. Last year, we were kind of... I remember we were at a party somewhere in Bristow Square for a little bit, getting quite very drunk on various concoctions on a rooftop somewhere.
Yeah.
Where was that? I can't remember where it was, but it was quite a...
I think it was Loft Bar.
That's it.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Has there been lots of the same this year? Is it more partying?
Ton.
More?
Well, it's the Edinburgh way. It's really odd. 4 a.m. seems to be the kind of early night that you have when you're doing the whole Fringe. And like, I had a dinner party at my house. My flatmates wanted to cook for us all. And so they were like, all right, let's do dinner. Okay, 11:30. And no one questioned it as a time to eat food. It's just so normal here.
It is. I think your whole body clock shifts to a degree that you sort of midday is morning.
Yeah, you go to Australian time, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's fine because there's loads of Australians here.
It's so fantastic.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, Edinburgh does truly become an international city during the festival. And I think people will probably be wondering where your accent's from because it's a little bit transatlantic, but not.
I was born in Hong Kong. And I went to an international school, so it's kind of an American accent in its core basis. And then I moved to Australia when I was 13, and I was there for all my high school years. Never really got the accent until I left. It's a weird thing. You get accents when you leave a place. I don't know why. So it's a bit of a mixed accent. British, because I've been here for about 10 years now. Australian, Hong Kongian. Yeah.
And the sum result is that it kind of sounds a little bit American, but not as well. It's a very weird mix.
I always get
it?
Told Lloyd Grossman.
Yes.
Everyone says that's my accent.
Yeah. Is that an accent to aspire to?
I haven't even Googled him yet, so I don't know.
You don't know how he sounds?
No, I don't know how he sounds. Because I knew that...
Unbelievable.
He was a big TV star, right?
Yeah. I mean, before he moved into Pasta Sauces.
Yes, he went into Pasta Sauce.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's the obvious step. Presumably, that's where you're looking into.
That's going to be
Do you make a mean puttanesca?
I do. This is all just a foil to get me to the Pasta Sauce... comedy's not in any way interesting for me.
Yeah, it's just a segue, isn't it? It's just a door into the sauce like millions.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be millions as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, gosh, do you ever see someone from Dolmio driving a normal car?
Exactly.
It's powered on the profits of pasta.
Yeah.
And that's how it works. But yeah, Lloyd Grossman used to be the chap who showed people round in through the keyhole, which was, I don't know if you know the program, but
Keith Lemon's doing it now, right?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think they're bringing it back with Keith Lemon.
Which is a weird prospect. Mm, yeah. Probably a good person to be snooping round celebrities' houses.
Totally.
Yeah.
So what did he do? He was just
He was the voice. His famous sort of catchphrase is, "Who lives in a house like this?" And it's that
sounds
kind of
exactly
just
like
you. Yeah. It was kind of this very learned drawl, which it kind of makes sense because you are a learned man. So perhaps that is why people are confusing the two of you as well.
Possibly.
Are you a time-traveling Lloyd Grossman?
I must be, right?
Has he, in the future, invented a time machine due to his mass food profits and being able to come back and force this other sort of career?
That's how much
alongside
money he has. He's built a CERN-like area based off his source. I've got to check him out. He sounds amazing.
Yeah, he's an intriguing character.
I hope I am him.
Yeah. He looks a bit like Alain de Botton as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's got that. I mean, you have substantially more hair than he does.
Yeah, but maybe he had this much hair when he was my age.
Maybe he did. Yeah. But I mean, you are a self-confessed hirsute chap, aren't you?
Mm.
Yeah, I remember I went to your show last year. Excellent, by the way. A doubleheader with Tom Davis.
Oh, thanks,
man. A brilliant show. And he told at least one very funny anecdote about the problems that your inherent hairiness has gotten you into, particularly with the opposite sex.
Oh, yeah, totally. My whole life is completely ruined by my hair. It's getting ridiculous as well. Like, there's just more of it coming, like, daily now. I feel like every day is like gardening for me. I'm just literally trimming. It's insane.
Mm.
And I have no one in my family is hairy. So I don't know where this has come from. It's just someone in the,
your
in the family
went to
tree.
Your mum went to a zoo a while ago.
Exactly. Like something happened. And but every sexual encounter I've ever had is kind of, it's a lot of me being a ninja, just trying to get the lights off before I'm seen naked. And my whole childhood, because I grew up in my teenage years in Australia, that's when the hair started arriving. And I couldn't go to the beach. Like, I look disgusting. It looks disgusting. I look horrible naked.
Now, come on, Dan, because you're an attractive guy. You're a handsome chap, a man about town. I mean, as long as you stay covered, mainly. Then...
I have sex fully clothed.
Yeah.
That's what I have to do.
One of the things that particularly I think you're known for is your love of facts, of knowledge. Mm. And I think that's been borne out by the things that you've done. So you've been a QI elf.
Yes.
And have a strong association with John Lloyd.
Yeah.
Who is the founder of QI and lots of other amazing British comedy institutions as well. And also the Museum of Curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. John gave me my first ever job when I arrived into England when I was 19. I was working in a remainders bookshop in Oxford, and John happened to meet my auntie who was working at local BBC radio in Oxford, and she said, "My nephew's in town, he wants to be a comedian, have you got any advice?" And John was kind of like, "Oh, for God's sake,
yeah,
another auntie telling me that her nephew is interested in comedy." But he's a really nice guy, and so he gave his number over, and I gave him a call. And we got on really well on the phone, and he said, "Well, I live in Oxford, so why don't we just meet up for a beer?" And then he gave me a job straight away. So for the last sort of 10 years, I've been very closely associated with QI. Mm. Even if I don't directly work on the show itself anymore, it's still a bit of a family. Me and John and my friend Rich Turner, we came up with a sort of sister show idea to QI called the Museum of Curiosity, which is on BBC Radio. And we've been doing that for the last 6-7 years. We just made our 6th series, which is going to go out in October. So still need to edit it. But that's my favorite thing to do. Yeah.
And you get experts coming on who are like an expert in a field and discussing their kind of passion.
Totally. It's my favorite bit of the thing is finding the people to come on. So it's a comedy panel show, but it's with humans who have done extraordinary things and know how to tell a good dinner party story about the things that they've done. And there's something about laughing at a story where it's involving someone who's actually done something. Like, you could make a joke about being in a submarine at the bottom of the ocean, but when you have an actual deep sea explorer telling you about farts going on, you know, inside, like just fart gags, something different about that kind of a story that makes you laugh in a really different way because it's true and it happened and it was in a weird place.
So have you had that then? Have you had...
We had a guy called Alistair Fothergill who he made Blue Planet, and he went down in a Russian submersible where there was only about four of them in this submersible, and they're bottom of the ocean. And he just said they all... It just does something to your stomach, and they were just farting like crazy. And it was the most distracting thing because it stunk like hell, but here they were trying to discover a new species for the world.
There's a real irony to that, that the one contained place that you really don't want to be farting, and yet it produces that sensation.
Yeah, well, apparently in space as well, during the Apollo missions, like the you know, the rockets on the inside when they're flying to the moon, Neil and Buzz were just going for it.
Old Billy Connolly joke, as funny as a fart in a space suit,
it kind of is
born out of fact.
Absolute fact. Billy Connolly researches all of his jokes. He just doesn't like to say it. He doesn't like to brag.
That's incredible. I didn't even realize. I mean, that would have been one of my first questions, I suppose. Can you still... I wouldn't know if gravity would have affected a fart. I mean, it would be great if you could fart out of your mouth. I mean,
I don't think it works that would, way. Isn't that a burp? That's a burp.
Yeah, but I think there's such different connotations to...
It's true.
That is true. If you pretend that, if you intimate you're going to burp and then actually can fart in someone's
face. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's only in space.
What a party trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they haven't told us about it. Maybe that does happen.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many little stories. They keep declassifying certain transcripts and so on from what happens in space. There was one the other day from Apollo 10 where it was a transcript which showed that sort of on the way to the moon. I think Apollo 10, they went around the moon. I think there were a few missions where people were just in a capsule and they went around and just waved at the moon and then came back. And there's this tiny bit of transcript been released where they just suddenly there's a turd, just a shit, floating inside the capsule. And so everyone going, well, whose is that? Well, it's not mine. Well, how do you know it's not yours? And how do we get it? How do we capture it? What do we put it in? All these great toilet moments in space that we're finally learning about the truth.
Amazing.
Yeah. So maybe you can't fart through your mouth. I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm going to say no, though.
Yeah, just to be on the safe side.
Yeah.
So you must be, you know, coming into so many facts, so much sort of interesting trivia all the time. Like, do you have a very finely tuned sort of sieve, a mental sieve now for what is good and what is kind of, what's really going to be a kind of a big hit with an audience?
Oh, well, I think it's... If you go into this kind of area, of, I think we all like facts. I mean, I think the reason that's why that show, QI, is such a massive show, because people, they love the comedy of it. But I think when you do hear, you know, just that one little nugget, you just go, oh, that's perfect. So the only difference is that we're actively trying to find that nugget that we know that if we told anyone else, you know, they would go, that's amazing. So that's the only difference. You just have to trust your own judgment, really, I guess. I mean, I read a fact, it was in the QI book, the last book that they just did of, which was just solid facts. And there's this great fact, which is when ants pass each other in the road, they'll nod at each other and then just carry on, which I really love because it's almost like Gary.
Like London
Mike.
Bus drivers.
Yeah, exactly.
Incredible.
Just a little, it's very human.
Yeah.
And to me, that's a great fact.
Mm. Where's the show? What can they expect? And
yeah, so the show is called Into Dorkness.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a cocktail bar called Maddog's.
Combining your two loves of comedy and cocktails.
Exactly. And it's at 7:25. It's a very interesting venue. I've had a lot of... It's kind of like being in a sitcom every day. It's on the Free Fringe on PBH. And it's fun. It's sometimes... I'm right next to a fire door. Sometimes that will knock and a chef will come in and just walk through the crowd. He doesn't say anything. He just walks through. And he's always got a full bag of trash, which makes no sense to bring trash into a building. I got told the other day that I had to stop swearing because there was a family having a dinner around the corner with some kids. And I got told that on my very first joke. They kind of a waitress popped around and went, sorry, do you mind keeping it a bit like less rude? We've got some kids around the corner. And I had to just... say to the audience, that's the most polite thing in my set. I don't know where we go from here. And I just had to improvise. And it was virtually an hour of improvisation. So it's kind of, it's a fun, chaotic venue. And it's an exploration of the whole geek world. Because we're totally living in the rise of the geeks at the moment. Mm. And I didn't know I was one of them. I always thought I was a bit of a geek whisperer. I knew that I hung out in that social group, but I didn't know I was a part of it. I thought I was more like with the rock and roll friends. Mm. Totally wrong. Everyone explained to me what a geek I was. And I soon realized how fun it is to be a geek. The parties you can go to, the interesting people you can meet. the mindset, the language. Mm. And so the whole show is just kind of explaining to everyone, check out this interesting little world that's rising and taking over right now.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, he sounds great. Do check Dan out. He's brilliant. He's very funny, very knowledgeable, and very hairy.
Very hairy.
Dan, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Well, that's Edinburgh put to Bedinburgh for this week, but do not fear. We've also got Ed Byrne and Mike Wozniak from the festival in next week's show too. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have. I've enjoyed it about a bagazillion percent. That's not even a number. That's how much I enjoyed it. I mean, if you come anywhere close to that, well done, at least for your inventiveness on numbers. Until then, you know what to do. Tweet us at @join_Dave and me at @BenShires. We love to hear what you have to say. Toodles, doodles. The Dave Weekly is a Pixiu production for Dave, hosted by me, Ben Shires, and produced by Joel Porter.